On behalf of the Association of Gastrointestinal Motility Disorders, or AGMD, I would like to welcome you all to our Let's Talk series program. Before we begin, I'd like to introduce myself to those of you who do not yet know me. My name is Mary Angela DiGrazia Dottucci. I'm a longtime patient who suffers from multiple digestive motility disorders and a host of other non-digestive diseases. In 1991, I was truly honored to be able to start our nonprofit international organization, which provides support, education, awareness, and advocacy, and promotes research in the specialized area of gastroenterology. During this program, I encourage you to share your input on today's topic. We do want to make sure that anyone who would like to talk can have the opportunity, so please be certain not to monopolize the conversation, especially where we only have a 1 hour time slot to talk. We also ask that you be mindful of other people's privacy, so please do not share your contact information with anyone during the program or request any contact information from others. And lastly, please state your first name or an alias name if you prefer before you talk, because that will make it easier for us to identify the voice. And if you find it difficult to join in on the conversation and you really want to talk, just call out my name, Mary Angela, and I will be certain to facilitate the conversation and direct it towards you. Today, our focus will be on saying goodbye to the pleasure of eating. And this is the topic that always generates a lot of emotion. Eating is such a daily part of life, but many patients with digestive motility diseases and disorders live with the uncertainty of the symptoms and what foods can perpetuate an exacerbation of symptoms. Some may only be able to eat a very limited number of foods. They may struggle with an appetite versus food intake, and some are on tubal feeds. So no matter where you are in your life, the inability to enjoy food and all that encompasses is a tremendous loss. My being of Italian descent, like so many other cultures, the focus on food and eating is a huge part of our world. As a child, I always looked forward to cooking and eating. I experienced hunger, had the ability to satisfy my hunger by eating, and I had the option of eating what I liked and when I wanted to. And these were choices that were made really based on my appetite, the social setting, and particular food preferences. I enjoy dining out, entertaining with the focus on food. I love the aroma of food and savoring each bite, and socializing at events where the focus was, of course, on food. All of these, which I took totally for granted. But as the symptoms of pseudo-obstruction invaded my life, little by little, all of these pleasures were taken away, and the long process of mourning began. Every bite of food triggered debilitating symptoms, and yet, still, I tried to eat any way I could. Some days, I could consume food merely because the hunger was so great. Other times, it was because there was food that I loved that I just couldn't pass up. But the symptoms would escalate, and my repertoire of foods began to diminish. Misdiagnosed at one point, like I'm sure many of you, with having anorexia nervosa, I spent many years trying to defend the fact that I really wanted to eat, but the symptoms were excruciating. I can remember the extreme sadness that I felt each time I thought about food and eating. Life went on for others, but I would just stare at the food, battling in my mind, should I try it, knowing the consequences that one bite would cause me? Or should I take every ounce of will that I have and decline? One minute I would eat a particular food and the symptoms would be somewhat tolerable, and another time I would eat that same type of food and be on my knees in pain. Fear, battling hunger, or the desire to eat anything plagued my mind. During meals, especially the holidays, as our family gathered together at the dinner table, I could observe the sorrow and pain in their eyes as well. It was a devastating time for all of us. It was as if a white elephant had entered the room, unspoken but observed, and everyone would go on as if nothing had changed, except for the anguished look that we would try to hide, but merely it was clearly generated from our faces. I realized that what I was experiencing was a mourning of the loss of my ability to enjoy food, to enjoy eating, and to socialize. And a part of my life was leaving, and ultimately, as time went on, was totally gone. After over 36 years of illness, I no longer have any appetite. I no longer eat in public. However, I participate joining in social events by having just sips of weak tea. I have tried to make it comfortable as possible for my family. I eat only one meal a day, and it's the same food every day, a practice that I would never, ever, ever recommend to anyone. It takes me hours to eat just a little bit of food that I consume. And I start at the table and finish while I lie down in bed. And as soon as food enters my body, the symptoms escalate, and I struggle greatly with the agonizing symptoms. The act of eating in my life has become work, a job I do in order to survive. But I have had many years in order to accept and integrate all that has happened to me, and the mourning process for that part of my life is done. I have accepted the loss and learned to adjust my life accordingly. Not an easy feat, and one that took many years to obtain. There is a huge emotional and physical component in having to say goodbye to the pleasure of eating. So with that, I now invite you to share your thoughts, experiences, and perhaps some helpful hints on how you have learned to adjust to losing the joy of eating. Is there anyone who would like to respond? You may do so. I remind you to please state your first name and be mindful of others so that they can also share their journey. Anyone like to respond?
Well, this is Karen.
Hi, Karen.
The smell of foods bother me. I am luckier. I can eat. But like on the holidays, there are like so much food, and you want to try things, and then you pay the consequences. But, like, I can't brown sausage or hamburger or anything like that. Smells affect me. They just make me hurt so bad, if that makes any sense.
It does. It really does. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't eat that much, but yet I carry a heavier weight than I would like, and I just don't understand that.
In response to those two things, what a lot of us do end up consuming may not make sense to anybody else, but it makes sense in our world. And the second thing is, so many people with digestive motility diseases and disorders look absolutely fine or do look a little bit overweight, and some are obese. Some are emaciated, of course, and some are underweight. But I hear that all the time. Why is it that I barely eat? I'm having, barely having good nourishment, or I'm eating these foods and I don't even look like I'm experiencing the symptoms that I do because I'm holding this weight. And one doctor had said to me that your body, it has to do with the metabolism, of course, but your body learns to work so efficiently with what it has. And our motility certainly is greatly impaired. That's the only explanation that I've received. But it's certainly, that's going to be one of our other things that we are going to be repeating, which was one of our other Let's Talk programs, to look so good, which is so hard because all of us are suffering so greatly. Anybody else have something to say about the losing the pleasure of eating. Hinam?
Yeah. What I was going to say is I remember years ago, I would go with grandmas at the holidays and enjoy the food. And now, you know, whenever there's holidays or whenever people come over and we do have food, I always, you know, have to deal with the vomiting at least twice a day. And as what I was going to say with Karen is, you know, I'll eat a small bowl, say, of old macaroni and peas or whatever, and then I'll have a period where I have to vomit, and yet, even though I'm not eating that much, I feel so heavy. And people say, well, you know, you look so heavy, but I'm like, well, how can I if I'm, you know, having the vomiting? And I wonder if, do you think, because, like, since it takes so long for food to go through, can that cause the weight gain? You know, like, they did tests on me, and they found out it takes, like, a week for food to go through. So can that cause a weight gain, being that it takes so long?
I don't have a medical answer for it. All I can say is that certainly when our motility is impaired, many of us feel bloated sometimes all the time, and many of our bellies can distend. So you're always getting that feeling of being bloated, which is why we accommodate the clothing that we use in order to make room for the girth that increases upon either eating or gas that's trapped or food that is remaining in the gut. But I think that also what we focus on is the outside public, what everybody takes for granted, and I was one of them. I mean, you just ate when you were hungry. You ate anything you wanted to do. The emotional component that goes along with the loss of enjoying food is huge, absolutely huge.
Mm-hmm. It is, because there are times, you know, a lot of, you know, for example, I go to Bell Awards every year, and they'll have a nice dinner, and I don't eat. I take the food home, and everybody at the table is sitting looking at me going, are you okay? We're having this nice steak dinner. Why aren't you eating? And I'm like, because I can't eat. I don't want to vomit in front of 500 people, you know. And
yeah,
that's the thing where when I'm out in public, I don't feel as far as food goes, I only feel comfortable eating at home. I don't feel comfortable going out and eating. I feel comfortable eating at home unless there's an occasional friend that will do it out with me, because I know if I have a problem, they'll help me to the bathroom. But most times I like to eat at home, just because if I need to get sick, I have my Ziploc bags. And now, Karen, if you need to vomit, do you do the toilet or do you buy Ziploc bags? So that, because I find with me the Ziploc bags work better than
I usually don't vomit. I just get extremely nauseated.
Okay.
The only thing that I have found is I can eat sweets better than anything, and I think it's because sugar breaks down easy. And so I have a tendency to gravitate toward the sweets.
And that's something that a lot of people end up doing. They have sweets or they eat certain types of junk food, and that makes people's judgment a little bit more enhanced, I would say. But I also would add that when you're at social functions, even people who know that you have a motility problem, and even those who don't, tend to pass something by you and say, why don't you try it? Go have it. You know, eat something, which is hot. I will never forget the first time my husband and I had gone to a restaurant, and I was just having tea, and we did our order. This is years ago, and the waiter came over and said, "Well, you need to order something more than tea, or you're going to be charged." And so I caught on my little dander, and I said, "Well, all I want is tea. That's all I'm able to have. I have a rare disease. This is it." So it was hard enough doing that in public and then to get all of a sudden questions. And he insisted, he says, "Well, then you just have to order a salad." And I said, "I'm not ordering a salad. I just want tea." And my husband was just so hurt by this whole situation and protective. He didn't want me to have to go through that. But I said to him, "Look, this is, everybody needs to know, and if I have to do this, as hard as it is for me, and as hard it is, as it is for you to watch, I need to do this so people are aware." So then I asked for the manager to come. The manager comes, and nope, no go, no go. And then finally the next person in head came, and I got to just have my tea without additional charge. And we never went there again, and my husband just said, "It hurt so badly for me to sit there, and I just wanted you to say, forget it, let's just, you know, order a salad, or let's just leave." But I persisted. That was kind of victory for me, even though it hurt. It was a way to show people that there are people in this world who have special eating needs, and you need to be able to accommodate that. Now, since that time, so many restaurants have menus for those who have celiac disease and those who have diabetes and all of that. So it's certainly easier, but that was like a breaking event in my life. That doesn't count when I got home and sobbed my eyes out in private because of the hurt that I was feeling and, again, saying goodbye to the loss of being able to eat. So I wonder if anybody has experienced things like that.
Well, there were times when, one time I went to a restaurant
excuse me, hold on for a minute. Hold on, we're getting some sort of a feedback. There we go. Okay, somebody. Okay, go ahead.
A friend, one time.
Hi, I'm sorry, go ahead. Whoever said hi, I Jeff.
Hi, my name is Anya. I have a question. I'm new to this condition and on liquid diet right now. I do notice that I do drink a lot of liquid, but I'm retaining it. Is mm-hmm. there any way to kind of get the liquids moving out of the gut a little faster?
Do you have gastroparesis?
Yes, and colonic inertia.
Okay. I have the thing. I have the gastroparesis, and I know from my own experience, I am affected by solids as well as liquids. You hear a lot of gastroparetic patients that say that they get filled with food, but not necessarily liquids. And then I have learned that there is a population that actually gets filled with the fluids and not necessarily mm-hmm. all the foods. And then there are people who get both. So the fact that the liquids are emptying as slowly as foods in your gut, I don't mm-hmm. have a remedy for that. I can just say that that can be typical of some patients with this. I don't know if anybody has any tips okay. on how to get rid of the fluid faster, except to say, you know, just sip slowly, and I guess quantity would be a factor in one sitting.
Well, thank you at least for letting me know that this is normal.
As normal as our lives get. Yeah, you're not alone.
You're not alone. With two things with me, and I have chronic inertia with and mom has to do enemas at night. But back, Mary Angela, to that other comment that you said, one time I actually did go out to eat because a friend wanted me to eat for my birthday, and she took me out, and I ended up to have the waitress take me to the bathroom and get on the bathroom floor and throw up, and it was really miserable. And I felt really sad when I came home that I was end up crying because I had to realize the loss of to get on the bathroom floor and throw up in an unfamiliar place that I'm not familiar with. You know, the floor is dirty, and so I will never eat out again like that. I just prefer to eat at home if possible, so I don't.
Yeah. It's very hard when things that you were able to eat, foods that you were able to eat, suddenly you are no longer able to eat that. It's a stage that is anguishing emotionally to people, because I know people go on diets all the time, and people have other illnesses where they have to change up their life. Our illnesses can be so unpredictable, where you can eat something one day and then the next day you can eat that same thing and get a reaction. So there's a lot of confusion as to, all right, what do I eat and when are these symptoms going to come? And I remember enjoying that. Now I can't have that, so we'll cross that off the list. And the shrinking of the repertoire of foods that patients often have become smaller and smaller and smaller. And with that comes all of the emotion that comes with that. It is a long process of trying to accept these things that you were able to enjoy, and then suddenly they're ripped out from under you and you no longer do. So when you're eating, there's always, at least in my case, and I know in many, many others, that underlying fear that's always there, that's always present, because you just never know. Is there anyone else who would like to join in the conversation here? I know we have a lot of callers on. Anyone else who would like to speak to the fact of the emotional part, or speak to the confusion of not being able to eat at certain foods, or having to explain to people that you can only eat certain things and then you can't, or having something happen within a social setting where, like a restaurant, and then suddenly you are caught to have to explain all that you're going through. Anybody have that? Anybody else, along with anyone who hasn't spoken yet?
Hi, I'm Susan.
Hi, Susan. Welcome.
I have a couple of comments. One of them, when you first opened the meeting, you talked about eating food just because you were hungry or they tasted good, knowing you were going to suffer, but you did it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that, and I go through periods where I can't eat much of anything at all, and then I have these periods of time when I can tolerate more foods and somewhat fit in and still somewhat normal things. And that can go on for a while, and right now I'm at the point again that I feel like I was getting away with something when I can actually tolerate more food and kind of fit in. And I'm at a point now where I just can't even tolerate a salty and cracker, and I'm angry and frustrated because I know I need a liquid diet. I know that. My body needs a break. I'm pissed, and I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And, so for the last couple of days, I've been having maybe a piece of toast, and I might as well have been a fried chicken. My body's responding to it, and I'm really right now. So I'm going to try to do the liquid diet for a few days and slowly try to add more foods. And I just wanted to add one other comment about the restaurants. When I do go out, I usually eat such a small portion that it never fails. The waitress will always come over and look and be, oh, is there something wrong with the meal? Or, you know, some comment. And my husband, I noticed, on his own, he feels bad. So he usually will project and go, oh, that's really good for her. She ate a lot. And he tries to, like, say the pain of the comment. Those are the two.
Yeah, that's great. Susan, how long have you had a motility problem?
About 15 years.
And
it's still, I still haven't figured it out.
I don't think anybody ever figures it out. But your reaction to food when you were first getting sick, as opposed to where you are now, has it changed, or are you still struggling with the ability, well, it sounds like you still are, the ability to eat, and
I
know sometimes, go ahead.
I definitely struggle, but it seems like I do have longer periods where I do better, because I've learned some things, and a couple of things are, I'm better at eating small portions. Even if I taste so good, I know it's not worth the price. I've learned to really stick with a small portion, avoid the foods that I know absolutely, because I have GERD too, so between the heartburn and the stomach pain, so there's certain foods I've totally just stay away from, and I'm okay with that to some degree. So I like a learning curve of some of my safer foods, so to speak, that I've learned to get by on. So it still stinks. I never go to a party without eating something before I go. Lactose intolerance, top it off. And I usually can never eat anything at these parties. So I've adjusted to the idea that if I just do these modifications, I could function a little better. Am I still affected emotionally? Absolutely. I still cry. I've cried the last few days, even during good periods, because I want that pizza or I want whatever they smells so good. And I just walk outside sometimes because I get aggravated, but I work through it.
Yeah, and that has come with 15 years of going through it. And I think, like in your case, as in many others, what happens with some of these motility problems is that they become exacerbated, and then they kind of plateau. So not that you're 100% better, but you've learned to kind of tolerate a certain degree of it. And then you can get fooled into thinking, I can handle this. This is good. And then, boom, without warning, suddenly everything becomes exacerbated. And then you have to go through that whole emotional component again. And it's constant.
And it's I feel like it's a grieving. Right now, exactly what's happening to me. And it feels like I'm at square one, starting all over. And now I have to go through this whole grieving process again. Because I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's a process that I think most of the motility patients go through, because even in your case, you've lived with this for 15 years, which is a heck of a long time, there are still parts of your life that you do mourn about. And I know when, I've had this for over 35, 36 years, so in my own life, I've come to terms with a lot of things, but then suddenly when I'm having an off day and I want to be able to do something, and suddenly my body is saying, no, you can't, or I get another illness or a complication or something, it all seems to come back of that mourning process. So with many patients, it's fluid. You accept it. You finally will accept it. Well, though some people don't, but hopefully the bulk of patients do, and then something triggers it, and the whole mourning process goes again, like many of the other illnesses. Anybody else would like to talk who hasn't spoken yet?
Mary Angela, hi, it's Dorothy.
Hi, Dorothy.
I was wondering if I could just comment. I think her name was Susan who just spoke.
Yes.
Susan, actually, I'm in the same spot as you. About a month ago, I was doing great. If you looked at me, you would never think there was anything wrong. But right now, I'm in severe nausea mode. So I can understand what you were saying. And I think what Mary Angela said, it is true. We have our ups and downs. But I think that's the nature for some of us with a motility disorder. You know, sometimes you're feeling okay and you couldn't push the envelope a little bit. and get away with some foods that you normally don't have. And then there's other times when you do have to go back. Like right now, I'm pretty much trying to just do liquids as well. And that's really hard. And I don't think that we give ourselves a break, because if you really think about it, it's very, very difficult to do that. We are surrounded by food all the time, probably 24/7. I don't know where you live, but where I live, if you go down the one road, how many, you know, restaurants are there and fast food establishments? So it's really, really, really difficult to follow the diet that we do follow. And I think sometimes if you just say, wow, this is really hard and I'm trying my best, we are human, and try to give yourself a pat on the back, because for the most part you have been dealing with something that's very, very difficult to do. I think I've learned that recently and maybe along the way, to just really be kind to myself and say, you know, this is really something that's difficult to do, and the majority of people might not be able to do it as well as you do. So I don't know if that helps, but it's kind of helped me come to terms with my illness and where I'm at, and that it is really difficult.
For example.
Yeah, Dorothy, you've been dealing with motility problems for how many years?
Well, I was diagnosed with GERD in 1995, so really since 95, but my gastroparesis was diagnosed in 2004.
Same as Dorothy.
When did you start thinking to yourself that, all right, I've been through this, give yourself credit and forgive yourself if you slip, but also to give yourself a pat on the back when you realize what struggles you're going through and that, you know, you're doing okay?
I would have to say it's been really more recently, believe it or not, even though I've been struggling for a long time and been quite ill over these, you know, past 10 years especially. I don't know why. I've been doing a lot of reading about patients who are chronically ill and the difficulties that we face, and I think especially patients with motility disorders, it's quite challenging, and I don't even think that we get the recognition, I'll put that in quotation marks, that maybe other diseases do, but it's time-consuming. You know, if I go out, I have to always bring my food, and it's not like you can be spontaneous. You take everything that other people do, you know, they take for granted, about going out to eat, or how long does it take you to maybe have a bowel movement in the morning, or to cook your own food and bring that wherever you go. So I would say within the past year, a lot of soul searching and just really just saying that this is really, really difficult to do, and to kind of be more kind to myself, because I'm not sure the next person would be able to do what I do every day. So sometimes I just kind of have to remind myself of that.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I applaud you for that, because so many people actually end up somewhat punishing themselves because of not being able to eat or trying something when they know they shouldn't, or impacting the social part because of symptoms that occur in public and all of the ramifications that can come with just eating in an area where you never know. So doing that, forgiving yourself and giving yourself that praise is huge. And I know we had one presentation before about dealing with the guilt and releasing that guilt and giving yourself that credit, and that you are dealing with a tremendous amount of hurdles and challenges every single day of your life, and in handling those as best you can, and hopefully with a lot of support, and I know in my case a lot of faith, that you do get through them. Anybody else like to comment who hasn't spoken yet? Hold on, Ina. I want to make sure everybody gets a chance here. Anybody else who would like to have a question or want to join in on the conversation?
Yeah, this is... Hello?
Hi.
Hi, this is Zena.
Hi, Zena.
I'm kind of in that mode right now where I'm just really beating myself up. And my struggle with food is I cook for people. I cater and I cook for people. But I can't eat, and I have to taste the food to make sure that it tastes right for the people. But at times I get so mad at myself, and I figure, well, if I'm going to do a little bit, it's going to make me sick. So I might, and I tend to go overboard. Like yesterday, I cooked. I was in the kitchen all day long cooking for people and packaging their meals and everything. And today I'm on the couch. My stomach hurt so bad. And then 2 months ago, I was supposed to go in to get a neurostimulator and found out that I can't get that. And I have a feeding tube now because I was so weak. At that time, my nutrition levels had bottomed out. And, I mean, I'm just frustrated. And I feel like I'm just beating myself up and I'm starting to withdraw. I don't even want to leave the house anymore because I just so frustrated with myself and just not being able to eat. And then, you know, you go out to eat with people and they say, is that all you're going to eat? Or if I say I'm full after a couple bites, is that all? You can't be full. I have a handful of friends that understand, you know, with my eating disorder, and each person in their car, they carry around these little bags because sometimes we're driving down the street and it just comes out of nowhere where, you know, whatever's in my stomach, even if there's nothing, I'll start heaving. But it's just, it's very, very frustrating and, ah.
And how long have you had this?
Not as long as a lot of people, just a year. But it just came, I mean, it, I probably had something going on before, but it wasn't bad. But then it just got progressively worse over the last, I'd say, 6 months.
Yeah, it's, certainly, I think everybody on this line can appreciate what you're going through. And, again, that emotional tie to it, you just cannot separate the emotion in the, the journey of what you're going through. And whether it's a month, a week, or years that you've gone through it, that emotional part always creeps in because we're human. And I know that people who are just on a diet to lose weight, and I'm not belittling that because, you know, there's a huge problem with that in the United States. But they have to say, all right, I'm going to stop eating this or I'm going to cut down on this. And then either they see that their weight isn't going down or they splurge one day and they say, you know what, I might as well just go the whole day and eat. That happens with people without a motility problem. When you have a motility problem, you go through that same thing where some days, and I remember this at the beginning of my phase, where I would just say, you know what, I'm going to try this. You didn't take courage, but you know what, I'm going to do it. And then you say, well, I've already taken this bite. I might as well just go all the way. And then I remember myself punishing myself because I knew better. But it was part of the process I had to go through. I give you tremendous credit because you are in a field where you are cooking all the time and catering. And I have spoken to people who are in the restaurant field and who have been affected by a motility disease, as well as even dietitians who have been affected by this. And that puts a different, whole different level of the intellect versus the emotional part that goes with it. So it's a very, very tough thing. Tough thing that you're going through.
Mary Angela, can I say something to Zena?
Yes, Zena.
I want to say I really applaud you because I know it's got to be difficult, especially when you have to prepare food all the time and you can't eat. It's got to be really difficult. Occasionally what I'll do is, with me, there are times when I will have days where I'll get a gift card for something, a place that I really like. And occasionally I will say to myself, you know what, it tastes good. Sometimes I do go. I have days where I will go all the way and pay for it. But then I days where I just stay with my turkey and and water, and I still, but I still get sick even on those days. So I have good days and not so good days, and and I do, like you, Zena, I totally can understand with the handful of friends, because I have friends that will say to me, what, you don't want to go out to eat? Or is there something wrong with you? Why do you want to go pick out a, because my favorite thing is music, and why do you want to go pick out some music? It's so much fun to eat. And I'm like, but I don't want to eat. And then I have friends that understand this, and then I have friends that are like, they can't understand why I don't want to eat. They're like, there's something wrong with you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They think I'm crazy because I don't want to, like, with my birthday, you know, a lot of people say, well, don't you want to go out? It's so much fun. I'm like, no, I would rather, if you want to come and visit me, and we can sit and talk and chat. But I don't want to go out to eat. And people, it seems like so many people, that's all they want to do is go out to eat. And I try to encourage people, friends of mine, to do other things with me than food. You know, just come.
But I always try to say, too, imagine if you didn't have this and your life was the way it was, and you come across somebody who is going through what you're going through, but you had no knowledge of any of that. You didn't know anything. If you have pseudoobstruction, they never heard of that. If you have gastroparesis, they never heard of that. So you are at a table with a patient, and you have no idea about their symptoms because you haven't lived it. How would you respond?
How would I? Well,
that's hard. It's hard to really say because the tables are turned.
Mm-hmm.
And I say in just about every meeting that we have that in your journey, you will find that there are a handful of people who will understand. So I have chosen to realize that there are some people that you tell a lot to, and those are the close ones, the loved ones, that will try to understand as best they can. Of course, I talk with other patients, and they understand. I realize that there are some people who you just tell a little bit to, and that's all, because that's all that they can retain. And then there are some people that you don't tell anything to. They just won't get it. And either I could be tormented by that, or I can just say, you know what? I have only so much energy. I'm letting it go. And it's up to me to understand that and be okay with the fact that some people just aren't interested or don't understand, and that's okay. I'll just handle the ones that do understand.
And that there's one friend, one or two friends of, like that, and I tell, there's one friend in particular, I don't want to, she doesn't want to talk about it, but then she'll say she has a problem or she's not feeling well. I'll say, well, what's wrong? And she'll say, but I don't want to talk about it. It's something to do with my tummy, but I don't feel well, but I don't want to talk about it. So then I say, I'm sorry, you know.
Yeah, it's a lot of decisions are made, and a lot of our decisions are governed by our past experiences at the beginning or midpoints or even towards the end of your journey. A lot of it is governed by our fear. A lot of it is governed by support that we may have. A lot of it is governed by our faith, and so many other, our environment. So all of these things, I just know that for many of us, there seems to be a chatter that is hard to turn off in our heads that are constantly saying, should we, shouldn't we, what if, what do we do? No, if you eat this food and it bothers you, well, maybe it's your fault. You shouldn't have done that. Or maybe you should try it today because you're feeling good. And it's okay with that. What if you try it, a food, and then suddenly you are in crisis? Who's going to understand? So all of these questions constantly rattle in our head, that chatter, that constant chatter. And part of it. You got to learn how to kind of use it a bit and just be able to function, because in the long run, it's your life. And you do have the ability to determine the way you think about your illness and all that you are going through. And you do have the ability to hold on to that strength, that you do get through it, and that you, although the illness governs an awful lot of your illness, that you are still you, and you still want to live some sort of a quality life and be productive and make a difference. And certainly the fact that all of you are alive today shows me that you have the strength and you have that purpose and that you will get through the difficulty. And it's okay that you yo-yo from acceptance to not. It's okay that some people will understand and some people will not. You're the one who is alone and has to cope with this, and you pick the things that are going to invade your life to impair what you can deal with and how you're going to run the course of your life with your attitude. Now, anybody else who hasn't spoken or who has spoken would like to speak about their experience or challenges that you're going through? I know certain foods when I cook, because I love to cook, I've cooked since I was a child, and I don't know if anybody else experiences this, but certain foods will trigger an exacerbation of my symptoms immediately just by the smell, and that is fried foods or foods that are heavy in fat content immediately, whether you pass a donut shop or whether somebody's cooking French fries or fried clams or something like that. Immediately, my nausea heightens to the point where sometimes I actually do vomit. Does anybody else experience that? And
now I have, Karen. If I've tried cooking hamburger or sausage, I get very ill just from the smell. And like you say, some places you go in, the smell can just immediately bring nausea really bad.
Yeah.
Like when family eats fried food.
Does anybody else have that as well?
Yeah. I have family members that eat fried food.
Well, I hear two voices. Who's speaking? Just say your first name so I know.
Susan,
hi.
I also am very sensitive to smells that would bring me to a severe nausea, that I could be sick all night from the smell. I can't cook in my house without the ceiling fan on. And honestly, I bought a gas grill, and I try to do most of my cooking outside so my house doesn't smell. But that's just, and people know I have children who come and visit, and they try to cook, and it's like it's the dead of the winter, and I have windows open, the ceiling fan on, and it annoys them, and they try to understand, but I can't help it. I'm like you. I will be sick all night and extremely nauseous from the smells of things. Very sensitive to it.
Yeah, and you have to do what's right for you, because. You know, and that's another thing, that many patients with motility disorders do have sensitivity to different smells, different environments, and even allergies to different things, but that's a whole different program on that. So, but that foods that you are able to eat, just that smell, and I can only imagine being in a restaurant setting where you are a chef, or catering foods where you have to deal with different smells all the time related to food, that just makes it all the harder.
I have that same thing with the sensitivity to certain food smells, with Zena again. And I do a lot of the cooking outdoors. The other lady said, I have a grill set up outside just so that if something has a heavy or strong smell, I do that cooking outdoors, especially if I have to fry something. And people here in the South love their fried chicken. And
oh my gosh,
that just turns my stomach upside down. So each week that I have to do that, it's outdoors.
Wow. I give you
and I have my daughter come over and help me with that because sometimes I don't make it through the whole, you know, batch of food that I have to fry in between bathroom runs.
Yeah. I give you all credit for what you're going through, really. Whether it's the smell of the food and having to cook for your family or for part of your business, your livelihood, or even people who are able to eat just a little bit and their foods that they enjoy they can no longer have, the foods that they used to eat all the time, or for those who are on tubal feeding. I give you all tremendous credit because it's not an easy row, but I know that all of you will eventually come to terms with it in order to live your lives. And like as Dorothy said, when she goes someplace, it's all of these preparations that go through your head. A lot of people do bring the small amount that they eat or whatever they eat to functions or family events just so that they can join in the social part and be able to at least participate. I just have tea everywhere I go, very weak tea, and that way there I can socialize, be a part of the conversation, and join in. If I didn't do that, I would miss out on so much more. So these are decisions that we make on a daily basis. Does anybody else bring prepared food to events? Their own food?
I do. No. Always.
Do you?
Because I can never usually eat what is available, so I always keep something in my purse, no matter where I'm going, just in case. And I usually have to use it. So everywhere I go, I always have something small on me that I can eat. I don't leave home without it.
That's great. Because, too, if you go to social functions and, you know, your body relies on food for energy, for nutrients, for proper functioning. And what you have to be careful of with many things within your body as a result of not eating or limiting your diet is the nutritional part. You can get hypoglycemic, which is low blood sugar, and which that can cause a host of other problems. So nutrients is an essential part. And that's why that's an area where many patients also struggle with because they know that they need nourishment and yet they struggle with what to eat, when to eat, and even how to eat in order to obtain the body to work as efficiently as it can with what it's fighting.
If I go out to a social event, this is a non, I usually eat before I go and just drink water at the event. I found that works for me because I don't want to be having to vomit right in the middle of where I'm at and not be able to get to the table, to the bathroom in time. So I just find drinking water, like at a social event, and eating before I go makes a difference for me.
Yeah, that's good enough. You know, that's a good suggestion. Does anybody else have any experiences, questions, concerns, problems that they would like to add who haven't spoken?
Zena.
Yes?
Zena, you had talked about that you cook. Do you cook? Are you a dietitian or do you cook for patients like at a hospital or what do you do, Zena?
It's a meal delivery service that I started a few years ago. It's like Meals on Wheels. I do specialized diet for diabetics or, you know, people that just want home-cooked meals delivered to them. A lot of times people have, you know, you know, they're at work and they have 30 minutes for lunch. By the time they leave their desk and go anywhere and get back, you know, their lunch is practically over. So I make sure the meal's delivered at the beginning of their lunch time. That way, hot, ready, they can enjoy their 30 minutes of lunch. I also do, like yesterday I was cooking for different families where one lady's a flight attendant and she has to go away. So I prepared meals for 5 days worth of meals for her family so that each day they just pull out, okay, this is what we're having tonight, this is what we're having on Tuesday, and so forth.
By cooking and different things. And
You're doing great work, that's all I can say. And I
love cooking. I just don't, sometimes I just don't like the food, but I really enjoy cooking. I enjoy flavors. There's times like when I have to taste and spit because I know if I swallow too much, then I'm going to have trouble.
Yeah.
But,
see, that's creative. Cooking can be very creative. And it can also be therapeutic as long as you're okay with the fact that you're unable to eat those things. But sometimes that comes later on. Part of the adjustment of saying goodbye to the pleasure of eating. But you are doing great work, and I give you a tremendous amount of credit for what you're doing.
Thank you.
You started this catering before the symptoms became apparent, or did you do it after?
I did it before.
How many years
before everything came on?
Do you know how many years it was?
Oh, gosh, I've been cooking pretty much all my life. My mother used to cook and cater. She used to cater weddings and stuff like that. So, I mean, I used to be in the kitchen helping her. I mean, I've always been around food. Food's always been my life.
So I can only imagine.
So I just feel like someone is trying to take a big chunk of my life away from me. But on the flip side of that, when people are eating the food and they're enjoying it, I mean, that just gives me so much fulfillment.
Yeah.
I enjoy watching people, you know, enjoy the food that I cook for them.
Do they tell you what they would like, or do you just plan it like the flight attendant? Do you tell them what they suggest you what they would like, or do you just decide, okay, we're going to have lasagna one day, hamburger the next, and go on?
She made suggestions of what she'd like on some of the days, and then the rest of it she'll leave up to me, because they're always healthy and well-balanced meals. Like hamburgers and stuff like that, I don't do that.
I think another area,
like
too, which...
broiled or a grilled fish or salmon, or, you know, it's just a full round, you know, it's a full meal. But for the regular weekly deliveries I do to, you know, different job sites, I have a menu that I email out, and then they select, okay, we're going to have this, this, this. No.
What wonderful work. Wonderful work. I think another area that's challenging is going grocery shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Going into a place where all of these foods are apparent. Perhaps you're shopping for other people, or perhaps, you know, you're buying special foods for yourself. I know when I first I was eating baby food, just one particular baby food. And when I was younger and I had this, people would say, oh, when's your baby due, or how old is your baby? And it hurt me so much because, first of all, I couldn't have children. But second of all, that was not the stage in my life. You know, I was still struggling with the fact that here I was eating a type of baby food. Later on, as I became older, people would still ask, oh, but they would say, how old is your grandchild? And there was one little child who said, Mommy, how come this person is eating baby food? And the mother was very good about it, but I just said, oh, because I like it. I enjoy it. And the mother took the cue from there. But, there are all of these things that you have to integrate into your life and be comfortable with, but certainly food shopping is a huge challenge. Huge challenge.
Yes. This is Karen. I rarely go to the grocery store because of the smells.
Mm.
Because so many variety of smells that cause sickness.
Yeah. It's certainly I can tell by all of you who have spoken that your life is filled with challenges, and saying goodbye to food is one of them. We are out of time now, but I would just like to close by saying that losing the enjoyment of eating is a gradual process. For some, it may be only temporary, and I am so, you know, happy for those who will get over this and eventually be able to eat normally. For others, it may be learning the discipline of only eating certain foods that may trigger symptoms. In other cases, it may be a life. Wherever you are in your journey, I hope you'll find some solace in knowing that you're not alone. To be patient with yourself, forgiving, and never give up. Hold on to that hope and know that AGMD truly understands and we're here to help. I'd like to thank all of you for your willingness to share a bit of your thoughts and experiences as they relate to losing the pleasure of eating because of digestive motility disorders. And I hope that after this program, you'll take a little time to reflect on our conversation as well as your own thoughts and experiences, and perhaps you'll realize that even though your struggles are mammoth in proportion, that you are alive and that all you are going through, you can share with others so that they too will learn, understand, and gain more awareness of your life with digestive motility disorders. In my eyes, you are all tremendous heroes, and I am extremely grateful for the honor of having you share a part of your life with all of us here today. I want to remind you that in April, we are holding our next Let's Talk series program on, I believe it is April 29th, that's on a Tuesday, and it will focus on the comment, "It's all in your head," as it relates to patients with a digestive motility disease or disorder. Words that so many of us have been told throughout our journey, and I hope you will join us then. I also want to remind you that on April 9th, that's on a Wednesday, we have a tentative interview with Ann Ravenko. I say tentative because she is up for a multi-transplant, visceral transplant, and she is going to be talking about her experiences with living with MS as well as multiple digestive motility problems. And she is just such an incredible inspiration, as she'll talk about, she'll chronicle her experiences, her emotional part that went with that, and how she holds on to her faith and her desire to really help others with all that she has learned and is going through. So that promises to be a very, very enlightening and really a moving interview. And then, of course, we will be holding a food obstruction group. It is tentatively the 23rd of April. That may be changing, but right now it's the 23rd. We are introducing our new gastroparesis support group, which will be meeting on Thursday, the 24th. That's going to be the same format. And then we have our Lexington, Massachusetts support group on the 26th and our regular patient support group on the 30th. I hope you will join us at least for one of them, if not all of them. We are running out of time and we're going to get disconnected. So I'm sorry I have to say goodbye to everybody. I hope that your day goes as well as it can be, the best for you, and may God bless you all. Take care, and with that, I close the meeting. Thanks for attending. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye.
I'm going. Hang on. Hello.